From WNYC New York Public Radio, I'm Leonard Lopate. This is just one segment of the Leonard Lopate Show, but every interview is available on demand at WNYC.org. This on-demand service is made possible by WNYC and its listeners, so please help support this free service by becoming a member at WNYC.org.
WNYC On Demand is supported by Open, how American Express serves small business. Open offers a range of products and services designed exclusively for small business. Details at 1-800-NOW-OPEN or open.com.
You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
In his new memoir, Horatio Clare tells the story of growing up on a sheep farm on a mountaintop in Wales. The London Telegraph and London Times have both called his writing in Running for the Hills the prose equivalent of Wordsworth's poetry. The book is being published in this country by Simon & Schuster, and I'm very pleased it has brought Horatio Clare to my show today. Hello.
Hello, Lynn.
Had you always wanted to write about your childhood, or was it more based on curiosity about what happened to your parents' troubled marriage?
I had always wanted to write, and I spent a good 5 years writing in the evenings and at weekends around my day job, and I came up with a fairly lousy novel. And then I sort of sat back and thought, I had one very good piece of advice from a publisher who said, you know, that was a book that you wanted to write, now write one that we need to read. And I'd had some troubled years. I mean, I had a very long adolescence, really, and I'd behaved fairly badly in the way that some people do, and I thought most of that was down to my own character, but some of it I thought might be... I wanted to separate out what could be ascribed to my childhood and what was down to me, and I knew that I didn't really understand what had happened between my mother and my father.
But then you found your mother's journals?
Well, I thought I would tell the story of our upbringing, because I thought it was a wonderful story, and I hoped that in telling it, I would learn about what had gone on. And both my parents are still living, so obviously this is a sort of strange undertaking, really, the idea of a child telling his still-living parents' stories. And I said, look, I'm going to tell the story of the farm, and I want to know what went on. And they said, well, you can use our journals. And they weren't intimate journals, but they were vivid recollections of what was going on from day to day on the farm.
And then you had your own journals.
Yes.
So it must have been fun to read what you were thinking when you were barely a teen.
Yes. No, it was very, very interesting, because we lived such a strange and vivid life on this mountain farm. And we didn't have television. Radio, in fact, was our only link with the outside world. So we had a lot of books, and we talked a lot, and stories were very much part of our upbringing. So I sort of started writing at quite a young age.
Now, later you went into radio. Any link between the fact that radio was your only connection to the outside world when you were young?
I think so, yes. I mean, it's very difficult if you don't have access to any other media to imagine really what the real world is like. I mean, we were sheep farmers in a subsistence manner, miles and miles from civilization. And one of the few jobs that I could imagine were the voices of the people I would hear on the radio. So, yeah, I think it became a lifetime ambition.
Do you feel that you missed out, in a way, not having television and the other things that other people of your generation grew up with and take, just assume is part of everyone's life?
It was slightly strange. We had a lot of American shows came over during those years.
So you missed Bonanza. Wow, that's really
I missed
bad.
The Dukes of Hazzard, A-Team, The Airwolf. And we were aware of them, obviously, because sometimes we'd go to friends' houses and to play after school. And Alexandra and I, my brother, would immediately zoom in on their televisions. So, yes, we were slightly odd. And I think we regretted it sometimes. But what we would see, we would carry back to the mountain in games.
Now, why would your parents, I guess it's mostly your mother, have denied you that? Your mother had worked as a literary editor, so she was in London, part of the intellectual world. Your father was a war correspondent, a news journalist. First, the big surprise is that they gave that up to buy a farm. How did that happen?
Well, this is the thing. I mean, my mother is a sort of wild romantic, really, and I think quite early on in their relationship, there was a scene in a restaurant in London where my mother said, let's look for a house in the country, darling. And my father said, you know, what about the money? And my mother said, oh, we'll manage. You know, I think she had posh friends with lots of cash and spare houses in the country, and she rather fancied it. But they ended up with this remote and ancient tumble-down farm, and it was a working farm. And they sort of fell in love with it.
But they hadn't planned to farm sheep. The sheep just came with the territory.
The sheep came with the farm. And my mother particularly discovered this talent and this love for sheep husbandry. And she loved the outdoors and she loved the life. And my father, very touchingly at first, really threw himself into it, which is something I hadn't appreciated when I was a child. They tried. They struggled with might and main. But In the end, my father was pulled back to London, and my mother decided to raise us up that mountain alone.
Now, you were very young when your father left, weren't you? Your brother also. Both of you born when you were on the when they were at the farm.
They bought the farm in 1970, and I was born in 1973. So it was always there in my life as a sort of weekend thing, and as our other identity. I think we felt slightly strange as London children too, because it wasn't a holiday home for us. It was, you know, we have to get back there, my mother would say, because they're going to start having lambs any minute. And then when their marriage dissolved, we moved there full time.
So a farm is not an idyllic place for everyone. Your parents' marriage, do you think, might have stayed intact, might not have broken up if you hadn't had all these pressures of going back to the farm all the time?
Well, it was a question I wanted to find out, and because I'd always assumed that somehow my mother's love for the farm had destroyed them. I don't know. I'm not sure that that narrative changed much, but in my final analysis, I decided that actually, although these people loved each other and although they tried, they weren't really suited, and I think they would have pulled apart in any circumstances. I think the farm and its pressures hastened it. But also, I mean, at the beginning, I think it probably melded them together, because, you know, when you face adversity, you team up.
My guest is Horatio Clare, C-L-A-R-E. His book, Running for the Hills, Growing Up on My Mother's Sheep Farm in Wales, is published in this country by Scribner. The book has been, as I said earlier, compared to Wordsworth, the prose equivalent of Wordsworth poetry. Have you written poetry?
I did when I was a little boy. I haven't done it for years. I mean, that review was the most amazing thing, really.
Well, being compared to Wordsworth, that's almost, I mean, it's ridiculous. Writing a play and being compared to Shakespeare.
I mean, it's ridiculous, clearly. I mean, there's no way. But I think there's something about my memories of the farm, perhaps because we didn't have television and perhaps because we grew up with books, are very, very vivid. And it was very easy to write in a way. And I think when writing comes easy, that's a good sign. And I felt very passionate about the things I'd seen, and I felt I wanted to share them because it was a very freaky childhood, really, and which you wouldn't necessarily wish on the majority of the population. But I felt that what my mother had given us was a gift. And I felt very strongly that there was, you know, it was worth doing. And I'm able to see those scenes and our life with the animals and birds and spiders and rats and mice. I mean, we lived as if all these things were really on an equal footing with us. You know, my mother believed in live and let live.
How do you learn to farm? Did people come by and tell you what to do? Or did your mother just take some books out of the library and figure out how to get a birth a calf?
Close. Their approaches, it was one of the things that I found out about them, how different their approaches were, really. My father bought books like Quantitative Genetics in Sheep Breeding, which is still on my mother's shelves, you know, unopened since the day he bought them. And my mother went out and watched and talked to the farmers, and she had one friend of hers who had sheep, and she would ring her up in desperation, you know, Angela, this thing's having triplets, what do I do? And they muddled through. They learned, I'm afraid, by trial and error, and when that comes to sheep farming, that means a lot of blood and death and ghastly scenes in the fields. But Mum had a feeling for it, I think.
I wonder about the Welsh language, because so many wonderful writers in English come from Wales. Do you think that enriched your sense of English?
It's a funny thing, you know. I mean, Dylan Thomas, I don't believe, spoke it. Our great poet, R.S. Thomas, learnt it and then tried to write in it and found that he couldn't. We were mandatorily taught Welsh once a week, according to the sort of government prescription. But in South Wales, in the parts where we were, it's not really widely spoken. And our Welsh teacher grasped very early on that these little children weren't very interested, sadly, and I do regret it. So he used to teach us instead things like hedging and ditching, and I remember lectures on slow gin, all the kind of country arts, really. To answer the question, Welsh is a very different linguistic base from English, and I'm sure, I mean, it's one of the things I regret, there are words in Welsh which describe feelings that the English simply doesn't have, like hiraeth, which is a kind of longing for home, which I feel very passionately, and hwyl, which is what you feel when the Welsh rugby team scores a try over England and all the hair on the back of your neck stands up and as one nation you leap to your feet and shout, yes. So, yeah, I am sorry I don't speak it.
Do you have a longing for the farm? Because, obviously, you aren't there. You are working for the BBC.
Well, the freedom it represented and the amazing contact with nature, I mean, not just every day, but sort of every hour of every day. I had mice living behind the wallpaper in my room and swifts in the attic. And these things were not to be disturbed. In fact, you know, we tried to accommodate them. When the swifts were nesting, we couldn't go up to the attic. I miss that sort of thing. I do miss very, very close contact with nature, yes. I don't see my childhood as a sort of golden romantic time, although it definitely had golden and romantic aspects.
How far away was the school?
That's about 8 miles.
Uh-huh. Was that where the nearest village was?
Or? Yeah, well, we would have to, when it snowed, we would walk down the hill to where my mother had left the car, and then the nearest town was 7 miles away. So, you did feel that there was a huge transition every day. And in summer, that was wonderful, because we were so high up that the light lasted an extra hour. So we would go back up into this golden evening. And then in the winter, it was absolute hell. The farmers in the valley used to say, we'll see you in the spring then. It was a very different climate zone. And that was pretty much what happened.
Have your parents and your brother Alexander read the book?
Oh, they have, yes.
Now, everybody remembers things differently. Have they told you that you got a lot of things wrong?
I start the book with an attempt to remember my parents before I could remember them. So I describe them to each other as they existed in my mind. I mean, if you think how you picture your parents before you were born, I mean, up to a point, of course, you get it right. But beyond that, no doubt you romanticise it slightly. I mean, your father's probably richer and your mother's better looking in a way than perhaps, you know, they might have actually been. My parents said, you know, this was slightly romanticised. They didn't really like that very much. Bless them. And I felt I had taken liberties, really, but they were honest liberties. It was honestly how I pictured it. My brother thinks that I got the story right, and he was the first person to say, he remembers different things, but they all think, I think, that I got the farm right, the place right.
How old were you when you left the farm?
About 13. Yeah, 13, 14.
Did it just get too tough?
This is the story, really. I mean, I throughout the book, you'll see my mother is bombarded with trials of one kind or another. You know, the money runs out, the weather is terrible. It's all desperate. Things break. Weirdos turn up. Sheep die. It all goes horribly wrong, and nothing will make her release her grip on the farm. And then towards the end of our time there, something happened. Love, in fact. She met somebody in the most unlikely circumstances. I mean, she used to say, here I am in the nettles, how am I ever going to meet anybody like me? But she did meet somebody, and in the end, the thing that loosened her grip on the farm was a love affair, and not necessarily a happy ending, but an interesting one.
And then you wound up back in London.
No, we left the farm, and we went down to the valley. We couldn't quite let it go. We kept one field, and this means you have hill rights, so your sheep can be put up onto the mountain every year in the summer, in the way that has been done in that area pretty much since the Romans and sheep arrived.
I actually meant eventually you wound up giving up...
Professionally,
giving the country, moving back to the big city, which is a culture shock for many people.
Yes.
And all these odd jobs you worked at, a lifeboatman, a bartender... and then journalism and the BBC, which is where your father went when he left the family.
That's right, yes. No, it was an odd one. I mean, I didn't mean it to happen, and I should stress that he was about 20 years out of the organisation by the time I got in. But
no nepotism.
No nepotism, that was our rule. It was a sort of peripatetic progress, really. You know, London sucks most of my generation and most of all generations back in, because that's where the money is and where the jobs are. And I was living in a pub on the King's Road, aged 25, in the most grotty circumstances, with cockroaches running up and down the walls, and thinking, well, you know, this is quite like the farm, but not as I would wish it. And so in the end, I bit the bullet and got a proper job.
Can you see yourself, when you get a little older, buying a farm and retiring to it?
Oh, I'd love to. I mean, the farming bit of it, I don't know. I mean, I've had a lot of sheep in my life, and they are interesting and contrary creatures, but I think you really have to love them to give them your life in return. There are so many ways a sheep can die. It's just depressing. But I would love to live back in the country, yes.
Well, I understand you're writing a book about Sicily, which is not exactly the country.
No, that was my reward to myself, really. You know, there was no profit motive at all, but it was just a wonderful opportunity to spend some months in Sicily. I lived in Palermo, it's a collection of writing about the island.
Horatio Clare's memoir, Running for the Hills, Growing Up on My Mother's Sheep Farm in Wales, is published by Scribner. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you, Leonard.
Thanks for listening to the Leonard Lopate Show from WNYC, New York Public Radio. You can hear everything we do and check out our other programs on demand at WNYC.org or on iTunes. This on-demand service is made possible by WNYC and its listeners, so please help support this free service by becoming a member at WNYC.org. And thanks.